Hey there, you're welcome to Founders Connect, a show where I have conversations with amazing entrepreneurs and operators in Africa. This is the right show for you to be listening to if you love behind-the-scenes stories about people, their careers, and all their businesses. My name is PC Timmy, and I'm very, very, very delighted to be your host. You can follow this conversation on social media, hashtag Founders Connect. You can watch the video of each episode on my YouTube channel at PC Timmy, or just search for Founders Connect on YouTube to find the playlist. Also, please share this podcast, subscribe to the podcast, leave a comment, leave a rating, and you know, share it, hashtag Founders Connect. Enjoy the episode. Hey fam, my name is PC Timmy and you're welcome to another episode of Founders Connect. Here I have conversations with amazing entrepreneurs and operators that are Africans and also in the UK. Today I'm having a conversation with Miriam Njimo. She's the founder and CEO of Ojja. Ojja is a product that I really like and I've been using for a while since I've been in the UK here. Ojja's mission is to radically reshape groceries and make foods from all cultures accessible from anywhere in the world. Miriam was listed in Forbes under 30 under 30 technology list in 2021 and they've also raised about $3.4 million, which is really interesting. So we're going to hear all about Miriam's story, why she decided to be Ojja, how it's going, and all the lessons she's learned along the way. Make sure you stay and watch this video to the end. I'll see you at the end, guys. By the way, fam, this video is sponsored by HubSpot, and it's a special gift from them for you in this video. So make sure you stay and watch till the end. Hi, Miriam.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. So I usually like to start from like the background, like where you were born, how you were born.
Okay.
So just tell me as much as you can about, you know, just growing up, your favorite memories, where you grew up, anything you can share basically.
Yeah, I'm pretty much, I always say this, I'm British born and bred. So I'm Nigerian, of course, by heritage, but I'm very British in the sense that my parents came here over 30 years ago. They came to the UK over 30 years ago. I was born in London. So I was actually born around here. I was born in East London.
That's interesting.
And then we moved over to Blackheath, which I've pretty much lived in my whole life in terms of I've lived in Greenwich, that sort of Greenwich area. For me, it's... I love London, you know, it's a really multicultural place. It's a place where you can find everything you need if you know where to look. And I feel like it's a place where you can easily slot in and out of. So every time I leave, I do miss London and then I need to leave again.
What's your favorite memory growing up?
Growing up, it'd be just pretty much me and my brother, like just wrecking havoc around London, to be quite frank. Me and my younger brother and our aunt, and she used to take us everywhere while my parents were always working. So pretty much, I would say that pretty much anything to do with that, anything to do with kind of cooking with her, going out and about, pretty much.
Did you visit Nigeria a lot growing up or at all?
No, actually, once or twice. I've actually been in Nigeria more now, I'm older, by myself, because my parents at first were just like, no, why do you want to go back to Nigeria? That's the way. And then I was like, what is this thing that I can't go back to Nigeria? So I started to go back more by myself. And then, of course, I had friends who went back as well and were from there as well, just came here for university. So, yeah, I go a lot more now than I did growing up.
That's amazing. Sure. Tell me about how you decided to be at Ojja, like the journey towards getting to Ojja school, other jobs that you had before you founded the company.
Yeah. My background is very eclectic. So I started off wanting to be a doctor, not really knowing why I wanted to be a doctor. It's a very Nigerian parent thing where they tell you, okay, so you're gonna be a doctor, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, fine, I've got the grades, whatever, let's do it. So I got into UCL to study medicine, and then I got there and I just realized, actually, I don't want to be a doctor, and everyone around me really wants to be a doctor. I think that was when I really clocked it. Like, people were washing their hands, like surgeons, like they just really wanted to be there, and I was just like,
not for me.
No, this is not for me at all. So I started doing some investment banking internships, and I changed my degree to a three-year degree instead of the 6 years, and I did biomedical sciences, graduated in that, and just did internships in investment banking. So I like to try things. So I tried pretty much everything in investment banking. I did sales in one internship, and then I did capital markets, and then I did IBD, IBD in terms of mergers and acquisitions. And that's where I sort of settled. But in the meantime, I set up a couple of companies. So I set up WCAN, which is a network for Black women in the corporate world. For the professional and personal development of Black women in the corporate world. And that was in my, I think it was in my second to last year. And then I also was just interning at a few startups. I worked at a couple of fintech startups as well. And then I finally...
So you're doing all of this while you were in school?
Yeah.
Right.
And then when I graduated, I went to work at Rothschild for doing mergers and acquisitions and in their industrials, logistics and business services companies. So I was there for a couple of years. But that was where I first interacted with the problem I think Odger is trying to solve, because I was living by myself, I'd moved out, and I just never ate Nigerian food. And it wasn't because I didn't really like to order Nigerian food. I don't feel like it's nice. I never really enjoy it. I prefer home cooked food. I love to cook, I love to eat. And I could just never get the ingredients I wanted. I'd wake up on a Saturday and I'd just be like, this is my only day and I just have to go all the way to Lewisham, or I have to go somewhere I don't want to go to. So at first I was just like, okay, well, wouldn't it be nice? But the more and more I thought about the problem, I realized this is actually a gap that a lot of people are facing. And the more I spoke to people about it, the more they would find themselves in the problem. And I'm talking everybody I'd speak to. So if you were, even if they were like Irish, they'd be like, yeah, I'm really struggling with this as well. Okay, it's not really the same, but it is the same, because everybody wants their food that are, that it's like the closest thing you have almost to your culture, most portable thing. Like, you can't bring everything from Lagos, but you can bring the recipes you've been taught, or the foods that you know and you love. And that's a really key magic that I thought would make a really good business. So from there, I just thought, let me just test it. So I built out a couple of apps, and I...
When you say couple of apps, what do you mean exactly?
So I built out an Android and an iOS app.
Yourself, or you got like...
I got someone to build it for me. I outsourced it to a company, which I would never do again. That was... But it was character building working with an outsourced tech company. So they built version one of the apps, which was a marketplace. So it was using stores that already exist, picking up things from there and then sending those to customers via these apps. And we ran this pilot for, I don't know, 3 months or so, saw some good results in the user behaviors. And then I was like, this marketplace is quite hard, because these stores, it's like we're just an extension of the problem of this market. It's like it's so fragmented, the infrastructure's not there. And if we do a marketplace, all we're gonna be doing is being an extension of all of that inefficiency.
Yeah.
So we need to own something here. So we built out version one while I went out to raise, pitching version one of the Odger warehouse model. So we have a warehouse now, and we stock products, we've got our own tech, and we use that to send products across the UK. Well, across London right now. And our focus is really about, I think the defensibility in this business is really how you acquire customers, which is very community driven. It means it's not very expensive to acquire customers, because people need this. And there's a community effect, there's word of mouth, there's all these things that you don't pay for that drive sales. And then on the other side, the defensibility is around the supply. So it's a really fragmented, I think that's the problem. You see loads of these things popping up and then they don't last very long, and it's because the market is incredibly inefficient, very fragmented. Infrastructure is not there at all. It needs to be formalized the way regular grocery has been. And tech can really speed that up.
Yeah.
So that's the way we're really looking at this business, that, you know, grocery is a great hook, but actually it needs to be completely transformed.
Yeah. So let's go back to investment banking
for
a bit. what are the lessons that you think that you learned, or the experiences that you gained in that time? Like, so a lot of years, a lot of internship, different companies, that has made it easier, or that you're translating to what you're building at Odger?
I think investment banking teaches you how to work, like, to be frank. Like, I think a lot of people actually don't know how to work. And I think banking actually puts you in that mindset where you have to work very long hours. Sometimes things that seem like they're not important to other people, they're actually really important to you, because you don't even know why. It's such a strange environment to be in, where you're up like modeling at like 2 a.m. and you're thinking, why am I doing this? But I can't leave because I need to do this, and I want that pat on the back. I want someone to say, this was a really good job. I think that is one of the best things about investment banking. It's the training that you get. It's the people that you meet, and everybody ends up doing super cool things from banking. I think it's a really good grounding for training. So that was what I took from it. It means I can do my own P&L. You know, I can read a balance sheet, an income statement. I can do valuation. I could do all of these things. Even a most recent fundraising a pitch I had, they were like looking at the model and they were like, did you build this? And I was like, yeah, because I know how to build it. I don't need to get someone else to build it for me. I think those skills are really useful for grounding you into how to, you know, manage a bit, well, not necessarily manage a business, but just understand the inner workings on paper as to how a business works.
Yeah.
And I can create my own pitch decks on my own models, which is also a good thing to do. So yeah.
That's amazing. And when you were talking about your experience as well, you mentioned WCAN, and it was basically community for women. Do you want to tell me more about it?
Yeah, WCAN is really close to my heart. All my businesses are really close to my heart because...
So all your businesses, so you've had more than just two?
Yeah, I also have a publishing company. Me and my best friend started a publishing company a few years ago. That's a completely separate story. But all my businesses are close to my heart because I feel like there is a lack of access for a lot of things. For black people, black women in the case of WCAN. And when I wanted to get into investment banking, I looked around and I said, there's no one that looks like me in this firm. Like I was like, there's no one above me that looks like me. There's no one around me that looks like me. And I like people who look like me. So where can I find them? And that was really how WCAN started. It was just this initial dinner where I got the London universities to come together. I got my ACS to pay for it. And I just brought black women who were interested in corporate or like banking or consulting together. And then from there, it's this nearly 10 years down the line now, and we've turned it into something where we're supporting nearly 10,000 black women across the UK. I'm not involved in the day-to-day or the nitty-gritty anymore, but it's still going strong with the next generation of people who are coming up after us. So for me, it was really about just finding a community of people who were interested in the same things that I was, and just made being in the corporate world a little bit less lonely. Sometimes it can be, it's obvious when you're different, right?
Yeah.
So you kind of gravitate towards people who
what would you say was your proudest moment running WCAN? And what does it mean?
I think my proudest moment was, I think there was one conference that we did where a girl came and she said that she came to the conference last year. She'd been getting so many rejections and she literally was like breaking down. She was crying. She was like, I didn't think I could do this, but because I came last year and I just interacted with you guys throughout the whole year, I found a mentor that I'm gonna have for life. I've been able to get my training contract offer, all these things that I wanted, I was able to do, and that was through the community that we'd built. And she just like hugged me. I was like, I've never met you before, but I'm so happy for you. And I think these sort of things make it like worth it, because it's, you do it for yourself. It's kind of selfish. It's like, I want some black women around me, but actually,
but then you see the impact.
There is actually an impact here, and it comes from a good place. So
yeah. And I was asking, what does WCAN mean? Women can.
It's like, so it's Women in the City Afro-Caribbean Network, which is a mouthful. So we say WCAN instead. It sounds like women can, exactly.
Yeah, actually.
It's quite powerful, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. So when you were talking about Oja, you mentioned that the first version you outsourced it and it was character building. Just give me some more context.
Oh my goodness. I had to I outsourced it to like a development company, an Indian development company. And I thought, oh, this will be fine. They've done it many times before because they know how to sell to you very well. But I ended up just doing so much in terms of product. So I pretty much did all the UI and the UX myself. I didn't have any experience in it. I did it all by myself because they were just on a madness. I don't know what they were doing. And it was every single thing you asked them. It's like I had to be a product manager to push the product out, because every single step of what we were doing, they just needed somebody to really make sure they got it done, test and check. They didn't test, they didn't do anything. So it was like I was like a mini product manager for that first product. And now I have a product manager, which is great. but it was very difficult, I'll be honest with you. And it took much longer than I thought it would, because it was in the works for quite a long time. But then it reached a stage, I think this was like after the pandemic, I was just like, we need to get this out, like stop all of this. And then within like a month, we were able to push it out, which was quite good. But yeah, it was a difficult process for sure, managing a remote team that's...
Just didn't get it.
They've got other jobs, they're doing a million things. Like agencies is a very specific way of working, and it just wasn't, yeah, it wasn't for me.
Right. I hope you're enjoying Miriam's story so far. Well, please forgive my indulgence. I just want to share something really important with you real quick. The beauty of Founders Connect is that it works for investors who want to learn about the stories of the startups they're investing in, startup founders who want to learn about their peers and just get relatable content, and even wannabe entrepreneurs who are getting inspiration and motivation to start their ideas. And so this free resource is valuable for both, whether you're a startup founder, you're an investor, or you wannabe entrepreneur. HubSpot is offering a free startup business kit. They're offering you 9 free templates to help you determine if your business idea is a feasible endeavor, to help you plan out your priorities and even pitch it to investors. You will get templates on business planning, feasibility studies, marketing strategy, calculating costs, making pitches, writing your elevator pitch, and even designing pitch decks, and much more. It's very valuable. I know firsthand how valuable HubSpot is. It's 2015-2016, I learned digital marketing by taking free HubSpot courses, and even till date, I still rely on some of their content when I'm looking for new ideas or just want to get more knowledge. And so I can recommend HubSpot resource with my full chest. So go ahead now, there's a link on the video description. Click on it. Go download it and then come back and watch this video. There's also a link just up there on the card. Click on the link, download it, come back and watch Miriam's story. I can assure you that Miriam's story is worth watching to the end. It's amazing. She's an amazing woman building an amazing product. So you get 2-in-1 amazing things in this video. The story, all the lessons and inspiration that come from it, and also a free resource with 9 free templates from a leading brand. Like, you can't get better than this. So I'm kind of curious here, when you started building Ojad, had you quit your job at that time?
I had, but not for Ojad. Like, a lot of people think I quit my job for Ojad. I didn't. I was doing consulting, I was doing some other work, I was working on my other business as well. I'd had enough of banking, so it was not really a case of, you know, this isn't a romantic story of me quitting my job and now building this business. It wasn't like that at all. But I did end up just sidelining everything and then focusing on Ojad. When the time came.
And what was the turning point, or what did you see that said, oh, you know what, I can actually ignore everything else and focus on this particular business?
I think the pandemic helped a bit, because I was just struggling more with the problem. It's very me-centric, it's quite bad. I was just like, well, how am I going to get this stuff now? I have this app, you know, I have, everyone's kind of inside, maybe I should start to focus on how we're going to do this. So we went into the stores. I say we, it was like me and my best friend. We went into the stores, we scanned every single product, we wrote down every single barcode. My dad's background is in tech, so he built me like a barcode scanner with my iPhone to make life easier for me. And we just put 1,500 products on the app. But yeah, it was great, to be honest. It was quite fun looking back on it now. Yeah.
What has been the most exciting and then most frustrating thing about running a grocery business?
Running my own business?
Yeah.
Running grocery. Grocery is very complex. There are many parts. It's like running 4 businesses at once. Mm. There's the logistics, there's the warehousing, there's the actual supply itself, and then of course it's just the e-commerce or D2C part of it. It's like running 4 separate businesses. And that becomes quite complex because of the moving parts. And it's also one of those things, like, you need a big team to do it. So we went very quickly from family style of like 1 or 2 people to like 15 people, because you have to do it that way. It's just the way it works, because there's so many moving parts. That's probably...
How many people do you have on your team now?
Total now, probably about 30 people, divided across the warehouse and HQ. We're getting there. Then there's more to come, but also, you know, there is the climate right now is that we should be as lean as possible, and we're trying to focus on growth and profitability. So that's what we're trying to do as well, like seeing how much we can get out of the team we have right now.
Right. So the most frustrating thing is that there's so many sides to the business, but what is the most exciting?
The most exciting thing is the potential of grocery. I feel like everybody needs grocery. Grocery doesn't get hit during a recession. It doesn't, nothing happens to grocery when the economy is down. It's because people need to eat.
Yeah.
And that is one of the exciting things, is that if you wanted to create a very vertically focused consumer commerce model, grocery is the best place to start. If I wanted to say, I want to sell things that black people want to black people, grocery is an amazing place to start, because everybody can relate to that, whether they're like me or like my parents or whatever. And then it gives a potential for you to be a bit like an Amazon where the hook is books, but you can sell pretty much anything to them. And that to me is the most exciting part.
And is that a plan?
Well, we'll see how it goes. To me, this is my vision. I think that I believe very heavily in that the future of e-commerce is vertically focused. I think that you can extract such value out of communities if you focus very, like you're very focused on one single vertical and the sub verticals within it. Because we say Afro-Caribbean food or African and Caribbean food, but really you go to one of these stores and it's like a bit of Nigerian food, a bit of Jamaican food. Like, what about the rest of Africa? Like, there are so many people who are looking for their foods and they can't find them. We get emails from like Germany and Italy and people saying, can you send us like banana leaves? Like, we just want to order 80, we have a wedding. Like, you can't find anything in Germany. Like, that's insane. So I feel like there's a really big gap here for someone to speak directly to Black people, and that's what we're really trying to do.
Yeah, that's amazing. When you were speaking earlier, you mentioned the climate that makes you have to walk lean. And what was it like raising your first pre-seed? And I ask because, I mean, a lot of people say that it's harder for women to raise, it's harder for Black women to raise. Yeah. I'm wondering if that was your experience as well.
Yeah.
Or were there specific things that you had in your background or that you did or people that you knew that also made it easier?
No, it was a whole new ball game, I'll be honest with you. Like, I think on paper, that sometimes makes it easier. Oh, we've got this founder, she's Forbes, she's ex-Rothschild. Like, okay, that's nice, but it's still incredibly difficult to raise money as a Black woman. I feel like it's a very closed network of people and you need to have almost like people who are vouching for you and back channeling for you. That's the way fundraising works. And if you don't really have that, it won't move the way you need it to. And luckily for me, I had that. Like, I had two or three people who just showed up and they were just very excited about what we were building and they said, you know, I want to help you, and they were doing all of that work for me in the background, so that definitely helped. And then of course, you know, you need to show up as well. Like, you need to be on point, have all your materials, like know what you're talking about, understand the vision. It was different, I guess, because I don't know, I think we were raising for grocery and groceries just was crazy back then, like a year ago. It's crazier now in a different way. But I think it was still difficult, but also people were very excited and they were willing to kind of listen to the proposition and they got it. So we ended up getting, yes, great VCs to back us, but also all these angel investors who were just super excited from Sainsbury's, Ocado, you know, Taster. They were very excited about what we were building and they saw the opportunity. So that definitely all helped get to the end goal.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So my next question is really about what would you say are things that have shocked you the most? Because you mentioned that you've run a lot of corporate businesses solving your problems. You mentioned that what was most frustrating is that there's so many sides to the business. But is there something else that makes Oja very different in how you're running it or the experience that you've had from the other businesses that you've run before?
Yeah, I think our focus is how we can try to use tech to make this more efficient. So that is probably where a lot of my energy goes to. It's around the product and the tech. So we started very quickly just with a website so we could just go live and start testing and start getting real customers and real customer feedback. But it's about how can we feed tech into every part and process of the entire supply chain and even around the customer funnel and be very data focused on this and make moves that only make sense for that. So we see, you know, I don't really mind loads of these businesses if they want to pop up. It's absolutely fine. I think they're only increasing the size of the market for everybody. Mm-hmm. But our focus isn't really around being a grocery company. It's around understanding how our users shop, understanding what they look for, all the data around how they approach what they do, and then of course making the supply chain just more efficient for every single person in this market. That's the end goal. So I think it's great when other participants come in. It's not really too much of a shock. So yeah, I think it's the tech focus for me that's probably been one of the greatest things and the hardest things, but it's especially when it hasn't been done before.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. And as you're answering the question, I was thinking about how you're building your team. And I asked because when you're talking about the outsourcing part of it, you started doing design yourself, you started doing product management yourself, yeah. Your investment background have got you doing operations and CFO work. Oh, and I'm like, okay, you've probably done everything except actually code.
Yeah.
But so having that amount of skill set or that just doggedness to be able to like, hey, I don't know it, but I'll figure it out. How have you done, translated that into how you build your team or the kind of people that you hire?
Yeah. You know, I'm a very get stuff done, asterisk stuff done person. My team knows that very well of me, and that's what I try to feed in our culture. It's like, you're coming and you're telling me all the reasons why you can't do this thing. Actually, I'm not interested. I need to understand how you think we should approach it. If we can't do it this way, then how can we get there? Because if I could do it, then we all can. Mm. That's really my vibe. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I don't really have a soft touch, and I'm trying to work on that. But that's the way I foster and build my team. And even when I'm interviewing or trying to get to know employees or potential employees, it's really like, so what do you like doing? And what don't you like doing? And when have you, you know, had no idea how to do something and you found a way to do it? Like, those are what's more important to me than if you have all the experience in the world, because I think sometimes when you have an answer to every question, I find that actually those are some of the worst hires, the ones that think they know the answer to every question. You never know the answer to every question, because eventually asking the question is what creates innovation. It is what makes things more efficient. And if you can't ever say, well, this is what I know, but actually there's this big gap that I never really thought about, then we're not really going to get to where we need to get to if we really want to say we want to build something that's different to that's ever been built before.
Right. So equality that you look out for is people who have a lot of willingness to learn and to just find.
Yeah, curiosity is important. I hate people who try to make things look nice on the outside and not interested. I think it's nice for other people, but when it's just me and you, I need to understand the reality of what's going on. And that's been hard, actually, because, like you said, I'm the kind of person who will just get things done myself, but I cannot run an entire business by myself because I'm not the smartest person in the room when it comes to operations or warehouses or logistics or, you know, buying. So I need to build a team of people who are excellent at those things, but we also need to have a culture fit where we can just get it done. So yeah, that's been probably the journey building my team.
Awesome. Obviously, one of the mistakes that I think that you've made is outsourcing, right? Are there other mistakes that you've made along the way in the last 18 months of running Agile? Or is there something that if you were to go back pre-pandemic, you would do differently?
I would have launched quicker. I think everything works out the way it's supposed to, but I would just have gone live quicker. I would have done more quicker, because the more you start to do things, the more you learn and the more you can iterate. So that's probably one of the things, just executing faster. I would have executed messier as well. I think there's no need for perfection in this, like, especially when you're first starting out and you have this core group of customers who love and are excited by what you're doing. You just need to get as much information as them out of them as possible. So yeah, I would have maybe strived less for perfection and moved quicker. I think these things always are helpful.
That's it.
Maybe much.
what would you say inspires or drives you?
It's a really good question. I feel like I'm really boring because I don't really have that much of an answer. I'm really honest with you. I just have this thing inside me where I just don't like when things aren't easy for me. That's like, this is really what drives me. It's like, I like soft life. Like, I like calmness. I don't want any madness. And if I have to be trekking across like London to get plantain, like, that doesn't work for me at all. And this is, people don't really understand that these are the things that drive me more than anything else. I just don't understand why I can't have a basic standard that everybody else can have. So otherwise, I'm just, it's not, I wish it was something more inspirational. Like,
I mean, soft life is inspirational.
Like, soft life is life. So that's where I'm at. So for me, that's my inspiration, I would say, more or what drives me more so than anything else.
And that's a great one. Like, if you can solve your problems, because you hardly ever find that your problems are unique to you, right? There will always be people who like can relate.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
For sure. And then it's like, okay, we're really doing something here, really solving something. So let's get all the way there. Let's try and make sure we can do this. And that also drives me day to day and my team. So.
What are you looking forward to the most, and what Odja becomes in the next 3 to 5 years?
I'm looking forward to us becoming a household name amongst our community. So everybody kind of understanding, even if you go to Spain tomorrow or you go to France tomorrow, just knowing, like, if I needed something really quickly, if I needed even my hair products or I needed something, I could just go on Odja. It's going to be really simple and easy. That's what I'm most excited about, because I think we deserve that. So that's what's exciting for me. And I can't wait for that to be the case.
That's amazing. Final question. What would you say are the top 3 lessons that you've learned along the way, just from day one to the point that you are now? Not just as founder of Odja, but even just as a person.
Yeah, number one, maybe the more you know, like, the more you know nothing. I just feel like the more you think, the more you read something or gain knowledge in something, the more you realize there's just so much more to know and so much further to go and so much more curiosity to go deeper. That I think also progress over perfection. I just don't think things need to be perfect. I think they just need to be better than they were yesterday, and you continue at that speed. And also, like, just forget about noise around you and the hype and the Forbes and all this other stuff. Like, it doesn't
just to do it
actually means nothing. Just get stuff done. That's like the biggest thing. That's the thing we say at work every day. It's just get it done. Like, there's no talking around it. Who cares about press? No one cares about, like, those things. They're good and they increase awareness, but at the end of the day, what you have is what the work you're doing day in, day out. And yeah, just get stuff done.
Yeah, so get stuff done. Progress over perfection. And the first one was
the more you know, the less you know. Exactly.
That makes sense. I know I said that was my final question, okay, but this is my real final question.
Okay.
I'm very excited. So when I was thinking about this interview today, I'm interviewing 3 women today. And I'm like, that's exciting. There was a point when I was started, because I've done like 70 videos so far.
Wow.
And there was a time when it felt like I'd done only like 5 women and I've done 50 videos. But the last time I shot in Lagos, I did more women than men now. Now I'm like, I'm super excited.
Yeah.
And the reason why I'm excited is not just because, like, I'm getting to learn stories from Black women, but also because I think it's very important for upcoming other women entrepreneurs or who want to be entrepreneurs, or even just operators, people who just want to see people that look like them doing amazing stuff. And men are great, but, like, we need to see more women like that. And you're passionate about that. That's why you build up WCAN, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if there's one thing that you want a Black woman listening to you to take away from your story, from your journey, or from what you're doing, what would that be?
I think, you know, you are a Black woman and that it cannot change. So you have to put it to the back of your mind. That's the way I feel about it. I feel like you have to find the people who are willing to give you a leg up, because that's what you would need. Like, you can work as hard as you want, but somebody needs to give you a leg up at some point. And I think you should be focused on how to get those things alongside hard work, and know in your mind that I am a Black woman and I'm going to face all these things because I'm a Black woman, but never let it hinder yourself. Don't hinder yourself because you are aware of that, because I'm aware of it every single day in every single room I go into. It's the first thing that will come to my mind, and I have to say, well, that's not going to change. So, let's move on to the next step. So I would say, just don't ever feel I can't do something because I'm a Black woman, or this is going to be too difficult for me because I'm a Black woman. It probably will be, but we're still going to do it, right?
Yeah.
So let's figure out how we're going to push forward. And I think that's probably the biggest focus. And also just find an opportunity to uplift everyone around you at all times. Like, people are always saying to me that, you know, if I was in a job interview and there's a Black woman, it's X, Y, Z. For me, if I was in a job interview and there's a Black woman, I'm going to choose a black woman. I'm not going to lie, because everybody does it. There's an unconscious bias we all have. And I feel like sometimes as black people, we push back on that unconscious bias, that we can't be biased, but why? Because everyone else is being biased, which means we're just on the back foot.
Exactly. Like, nepotism is like bad thing. Do it.
I don't see any problem with it personally. I hope I don't get in trouble for saying that. But that's my view. So for me, always take the opportunity to uplift another black woman. That's where I always stand on that as well. So,
yeah, I really like that. I am. One of my favorite things about doing these interviews is not just because of people that watch it, because I know that they always learn, but because I also learn from it, right? Yeah, and there's a lot of things I've learned from your story. I think the first thing that struck me was just how you're really into just getting stuff done. So like when you start talking about, oh, I was in investment banking, but you said in UI UX, and I'm like, okay.
I don't know how I got here, to be honest. I say it all the time.
Yeah, and that's one of the traits that I see, like, because I've seen a lot of patterns as well with a lot of founders I interview, just like the ability to like, oh, this is a problem that I'm really passionate about, and I'm going to do whatever it takes to get it done. If I have to roll up my sleeves and get my hands dirty or learn a new skill, I'm going to do it. And then at some point, if I didn't have the funds or the access, I wouldn't hire other people. But at the beginning, as scrappy, as messy as it can be, like, that was the first thing that I learned. And then the other thing I learned was just about how, I think, and you didn't say it, but it was in the stories that you were saying about how you, Oja is very customer focused. And you just kept saying, oh, we tested at first, learn customer behavior, learn data. I'm a data person, so I'm like, oh, okay, this is really great, right? And I was telling you at the beginning that when I ordered my first Oja package and I saw the package, I'm like, oh, there's something intentional here. And so just learning, hearing you say, oh, we're very intentional about listening to users, understanding their behavior, getting the data, that just really makes me feel good, because I can then see it from the product myself. And I think that's very important, because the best way to build a great business is to be very customer centric, you know. And I think the last thing that struck me was when you're talking about women, like, it's never going to change. I'm always going to be a black woman, and honestly, there would always be an unconscious bias in every room, but that doesn't have to limit me. It could then be an opportunity for me to say, hey, regardless of whatever I'm walking into, I will still show up and do my best, and then create room for other black women as well to, you know, do their best whenever I can. So yeah, awesome. I've learned a lot.
Great. I love that.
Thank you so much. Do you have any final words for me and my viewers?
Just keep building, just get it done. I feel like don't ever think this is the right time to be building a business. This is the right time when everything feels like it's going to like crap. It's the right time to build something super impactful. So just keep pushing. And if you're interested in building something, this is the time to do it. So yeah.
That's amazing. And of course, if you're in the UK, use Oja.
And of course, yeah, shop on Oja. Whoops, shop on Oja. Yeah, guys, try it out. Tell me what you think. Even if it's good, bad, anything. I love the feedback. So yeah.
Amazing. Awesome. Thank you so much, Ryan, for having this conversation with me. And thank you guys for listening to this conversation to the end. I know that you learned something, that you enjoyed the video. So make sure you like, share, comment, and please subscribe to my channel before you leave. I'll see you in the next video. Peace out. You can tell them peace out as well.
Peace out.
Amazing. Hey, I hope you enjoyed watching this video as much as I enjoyed having this conversation with Miriam. Thank you so much for watching to the end, by the way. Also, remember that you too can build a great business. Download HubSpot's free business startup kit with 9 free templates. There's a link in the video description. Just click download and I would see you in the next video. Oh, don't forget to subscribe. Peace.